Happy are those who know they are spiritually poor. The kingdom of heaven belongs to them.
Afortunados los que tienen espíritu de pobre, porque el reino de Dios le pertenece.
Happy are those who mourn. God will comfort them.
Afortunados los que sufren, porque Dios los consolará.
Happy are those who are humble. They will receive what God has promised.
Afortunados los que son humildes, porque la tierra de Dios prometió será de ellos.
Happy are those who do what God requires, more than to eat and drink.
God will satisfy them fully.
Afortunados los que tienen hambre y sed de justicia, porque quedarán completamente satisfechos por Dios.
Happy are those who are merciful to others. God will be merciful to them.
Afortunados los que tienen compasión de otros, porque Dios también tendrá compasión de ellos.
Happy are the pure in heart. They will see God.
Afortunados los que tienen corazón puro, porque ellos verán a Dios.
Happy are those who work for peace. God will call them his children.
Afortunados los que trabajan para que haya paz en el mundo, porque Dios nos llamará hijos suyos.
Happy are those who are persecuted because they do what God requires. The kingdom of heaven belongs to them.
Afortunados los que son maltratados por practicar la justicia, porque el reino de Dios les pertenece.
Happy are you when people insult you and persecute you and tell all kinds of evil lies against you because you are my followers.
Cuando la gente los insulte, los persiga y hable mal de ustedes por causa mía, sepan que son afortunados a los ojos de Dios.
Be happy and glad, for a great reward is kept for you in heaven. This is how the prophets who lived before you were persecuted.
Pónganse contentos y alégrense porque van a recibir un gran premio en el cielo. Así maltrataron también a los profetas que vivieron antes de ustedes. Amén.
All right. The reason that I was asked to speak was because of this little booklet that I penned called Meditation on the Beatitudes, and the second part of it, which is Lessons from the Margins. I titled my speech, What Do Mennonite Voluntary Service, Spanish Professor, and a Seminary Degree in Spiritual Formation Have in Common? Well, by the end of what I have to say, I hope you will realize that this is the product of those three different items. I want to start out by reading from page 14 of the introduction. At age 19, I was thrust out of my naive and insular world of rural Pennsylvania into the world of intercultural relationships and the poverty of a developing world. I had been drafted during the Vietnam War and had registered as a conscientious objector and had fulfilled my obligation to the government by serving 2.5 years with a Christian Voluntary Service Mission Agency, that's Mennonite Voluntary Service, now Eastern Mennonite Missions. Little did I know how profoundly this encounter with strangers, marginalized people, would affect me and how much I would learn from them. I felt so often that these Beatitudes reflected people who I had come in contact with in the Third World rather than our own lifestyles. The poverty and oppression that I saw in Latin America were overwhelming to me. I didn't know how to deal with it. Why did God allow such disparities of wealth and poverty to exist in the world? And then added to this confusion was what my Honduran friends told me about my own country's policies in the region which kept them in this poverty and oppression. When I left Honduras, one of those friends who kept reminding me of these things told me never to forget what I had seen and heard and in Honduras, and to tell their story to everyone with whom I come into contact. So I became a Spanish teacher and told their stories in my classes. I took groups to Mexico and Central America and continued to tell their story. Here's an example of one of those stories from the Beatitude on Blessed Are the Meek. Doña Josefina cooked for our small band of Mennonite Central Committee volunteers, rebuilding homes after a powerful earthquake wiped out a large percentage of her small Guatemalan town. No soy nada. I am nothing, she kept repeating over and over again. Being a woman, she was near the bottom of the social ladder in her culture. Being a woman who couldn't bear children forced her even lower down the ladder. Then, to make matters worse, being a woman deserted by her husband because of barrenness landed her only a few rungs above prostitutes and other lowlifes. She had been told so often that she was nothing that she internalized it and believed it to be true. She learned to be quiet, to bear her humble position patiently. Unfortunately, the more I told their story, like the story of Josefina, the angrier I became. I tried many intellectual constructs to deal with social change, to deal with my inner anger, from liberation theology to more equitable social constructs to deal with social change. Peter Berger, Gustavo Gutierrez, Juan Segundo, and Paulo Freire became my heroes. Many of my colleagues, where I was teaching, and I were radicalized by the social and liberation movements happening around the world in the 60s and the 70s. We declared that we were missionaries among our students and ranted and raved against unbridled capitalism and empire. But those intellectual constructs didn't help me cope with my inner rage. When I was in my middle 30s, I went through a crisis that I called a midlife vocational crisis. Someone later called it a spiritual crisis. I tried many different jobs. I went to Switzerland for a year to find myself. Instead, I found a life partner. Well, that wasn't bad, but I didn't find myself there. I came back to my former teaching position at Heston College. Then I moved on to EMU. I thought I could quell this inner anger and guilt by returning to Latin America to settle this restlessness as well. This time, I went to Mexico for a 3-year term with Mennonite Central Committee. Perhaps I could find myself there. Calvin Shank, who is a former professor of Bible and religion here at EMU, called this a holy restlessness that I was experiencing. I wanted to believe that, but as I look back now, I think it was probably more of a cultural restlessness. It's where I was in my life journey and where many colleagues went through the same thing. Unfortunately, once again, I did not find myself in Mexico. But I did find more of their stories about injustice and oppression to tell, and my righteous indignation grew. I returned to Heston after the 3 years in Mexico to teach another 5-year stint. By now, I had tempered my radicalism a little bit with a mixture of readings in Jungian psychology, Morton Kelsey's spiritual formation, and a little bit more evangelical understandings from my time working with the Mennonite Church in Mexico. I threw myself into church activities back home, including helping out with a small Hispanic church plant in Heston. But I was still restless. When the opportunity came, I moved to Harrisonburg once again to work as the director of communications for Virginia Mennonite Conference and Virginia Mission Board. When the opportunity of cross-cultural director came available at Eastern Mennonite University, I jumped for it. But it only took me 5 years to realize that that was not for me. And so I returned full-time to the classroom, where I find myself now. Is that proof enough for you that I was restless? Or do I need to say more? Was it holy restlessness? Because of the work that I did with dreams from my Jungian psychology reading and the meditation from Morton Kelsey's works, along with some personal mystical experiences, I'm speaking about inexplicable experiences with God, I began taking my interest in spirituality more seriously. So I enrolled and completed a degree at Eastern Mennonite Seminary with a concentration in spiritual formation. There I discovered a beautiful quote from St. Augustine from his Confessions. "You have made us for yourself, O Lord, and our heart is restless until it rests in you." As I reflected on that quote and as I reflected on my own life, I came to the realization that while I had been telling their story, I had been neglecting my own story. Then I heard a story from Mennonite World Conference held in Paraguay several years ago that gave me a metaphor for my life. The story goes like this. There was a Paraguayan man from the Chaco who was asked to attend the conference of Mennonites in Asunción. And he had never traveled outside of his village before. So he jumped on a bus. It took him 4 hours to get from the Chaco to Asunción. And when he got to Asunción, he went off in the corner somewhere of the conference room and sat by himself. Other people came up and looked at him after they were sitting there for a half hour, an hour. He said, "What's wrong, brother? What's going on?" And he said, "Well, you know, that bus ride from the Chaco to Asunción was so fast and furious that I just decided to sit here and wait for my soul to catch up to the rest of me. My whole life, I was trying new experiences like a speeding bus on the way to nowhere, with little time for reflection on these experiences. Each new experience made me more restless. And just like each time I told their story, I became angrier. I had to slow down, reflect, sit in silence, and then write. I had to tell my story. By so doing, I am slowly allowing my soul to catch up to the rest of me, and I'm learning to let my restless heart find its rest in God. I am finding my voice, my vocation. The writing of my book brings the jolting experience of my Mennonite voluntary service, my years as Spanish teacher, and my seminary reflections on spiritual formation all together into one. In my book, I start with a story for each beatitude, like I read one for you on the meek, followed by a section on how different the values of the kingdom are from the values of most cultures, and especially our own culture. And the people in my stories, like Doña Josefina, reflect the values of the kingdom so much better than most of us do. The final part of each chapter is how I have struggled with trying to live out the values portrayed by my friends in Latin America. Now their story becomes my story. My integrated story helps me to overcome my anger, helps me to rest in God, and helps my soul to catch up to the rest of me. I want to read from that same beatitude, "Blessed are the meek." Becoming the meek. Being white and male, wherever I have traveled, especially in Latin America, I have experienced far more white privilege and male deference than injustice. I have usually been treated with utmost respect and taken places where only the privileged were allowed to go. Although I have been wronged at times by others, like everyone else, I have not experienced much institutional injustice like many of the characters in my stories. Haughtiness has been easier to attain than meekness. The resultant ego inflation makes me more demanding wherever I go. When I don't get my way, I become disgruntled, resentful. My blood pressure rises. If not outwardly, inwardly, I throw a tantrum. I actually think I'm experiencing injustice. But the irony is this. I am relying on my own sense of privilege as a white male and a U.S. American rather than being dependent on God. Once again, ire and resentment dominate the character of the non-meek. Kerry Walters calls this egotistical reaction, quote, a beast, unquote, noting that, quote, a meek person is the one who tames the savage beast within us, unquote. Being able to tame this beast goes against every fiber of our human ego and socialized behavior. Cultivating humility and patience is just as difficult. Only as we learn to be still and listen for the voice of God within us can we overcome the beast. Walters says it this way, quote, listening is the only possibility when we become quiet, when our will causes its noisy and self-important maneuvering. I'm sorry, when our will ceases this noisy and self-important maneuvering, when we finally acknowledge defeat and lay down our arms. Acknowledging this defeat allows us an unlikely victory over our ego and ethnocentric values. Now, whenever I write about my passion, which is the intersection of cross-cultural study and spiritual formation. That is my story. I'm a believer in cross-cultural education. In fact, I've led 3-semester-long EMU groups in Guatemala and Mexico. But along with showing them the cruel realities of Latin America, telling them their story, those of my Latin American friends, I include reflection and spiritual formation so that their souls are not left behind by telling my story. So I continue to teach Spanish and work on my spiritual formation. I tell both their story and my story. The beast of anger that their story produced has been tamed as I continue on my journey to meekness.